Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
I don't get offended when I see a Confederate flag, because when I see a Confederate flag, all I see is a Cleveland Brown fan, somebody who like to continue to lose.
Hey, man, that is an interesting point. The Civil War is the only war I've ever seen where we continue to celebrate
loser.
Well, we as a country.
I'll tell you a story. So, I wanted to be a supportive mom. I didn't want to be a shitty mom like my mama was. Mm-hmm. So we living in Riverdale, Georgia, in the early 90s. And we go on this field trip, and literally, Tip, it was to a Confederate cemetery.
What?
Telling you all about these fucking Confederate soldiers. I don't know what the Confederate soldiers is.
Right.
All I know is I'm ready to fucking eat this sack lunch I brought. So one of the kids is like, is the General Lee buried here?
Yeah.
I'm like, who the fuck is General Lee? And I'm like, this dumbass can't bury the Dukes of Hazzard.
I'm a diverse individual.
All of this shit is real. Everybody like, what is it? Is he a family man? Is he a trapper? Is he a ladies man? Well, I'm all of it. All of it.
I beat your ass, kiss your girl, and go tuck my kids in. And then I show up and lead a march on the weekend.
It's all real. Real, real.
This is Expeditiously. I am Tip T.I. Harris. Yes, sir. So the following experience is not a test. These conversations and stories expressed on this podcast are meant to be an expression of purpose and truth. This show, properly entitled Expeditiously, is a free exchange of ideas and opinions. No judgment, no preconceived beliefs, and no fear. Open your mind up, and your ass will follow. All right, so you're encouraged to share your thoughts and ask any question as long as it's done with respect. We believe it is through love and respect for others that we will have an opportunity to change the world and speak truth to power. We're going to do that one show at a time. Now, this is Expeditiously. I am your host, Tip T.I. Harris. Now, our guest for today is someone who is, you know, very of the culture. You know what I'm saying? And we have similar backgrounds. She's a comedian, an author, a podcaster, and an actress who's taking raw, real, in-your-face comedy to the next level. She has an amazing story. I guess a part of this story of hers is at the age of 15 with two kids, she was selling crack on the inner city streets of Atlanta. And at 19 years of age, with two toddlers and a new husband, her sister, who was struggling with addiction, handed her four more kids. And all of these stories made up a book. She put into a book called Rabbit, the Autobiography of Miss Pat. And she was nominated for an NAACP Image Award for that book. She's a wife, a mother, and most importantly, she's funny as hell. So everybody, please give your attention to the guest of Expeditiously today, the talented Miss Pat. What's going on?
Hey, Tip, how you doing?
Man, I'm chilling, man. Ain't shit to it.
I gotta tell you, my favorite fucking rapper.
Man,
I bootleg a few people's shit, but I never bootleg your shit. Okay? You, Whitney Houston, and Ice Cube, I would not bootleg your shit.
Man, I appreciate that. That's real.
Hey, every time I see you, I was like, yep, I help you with that watch, Tip.
That's right. Yeah, man. And shit, deservingly so.
Yes.
Now, tell us about, like, Miss Pat. Like, where do you draw the inspiration for your comedy? Because you can't make that kind of shit up.
No, life. I mean, life. I mean, we kind of got the similar background. We grew up kind of in the same neighborhood.
Refugees of the war on drugs.
Yes, refugees of the war. I was there when, I'm a little bit older than you, so I was there when it first hit the black community.
Okay.
What, early 80s?
Like 83?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, because I had my daughter in 86.
Okay.
So, by the time 87 got here, I was selling crack.
That's right.
So, people was, you know, black people still warming up to it in 83. 85, 86.
Yeah.
By 87, it was full blown. I mean, you was making fucking money.
People still thought it was like just a cool party drug at the time.
Yeah, they thought it was like weed, but they didn't realize you. So they didn't realize, you know, one thing I always tell people, crack took the price of pussy down. So I told my mama that they was giving black people $100 to hold on to uncooked chicken legs downtown in Atlanta. She knew I was, but she was like, where he at? What a nigga at? So we went back looking for him, but
I'm telling you. But I mean, I think the best part about it is we endured it, we overcame it,
yes,
and now we get to make money off of our stories.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And it developed a story. I ended up having two kids.
Mm-hmm.
My first kids I had at 14. I had another kid at 15 by a married man.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, man.
Yeah, he was married with a wife.
Did he stay married?
No.
That was kind of the end of that. Oh,
he stayed married for a little while, but you know, when I met him, he had one child.
Right.
By the time I left him, he had like 22 kids. So I ended up staying with him for 10 years, and I sold drugs. He sold drugs.
Uh-huh.
He ended up shooting me, and then another
nigga. He shot you?
Yeah, he shot me.
God damn.
Yeah, I was crazy. My mama told me one of the most dangerous
what
things.
What would make a man shoot a woman? Was you cheating?
I would say good pussy, but I don't even think. I don't know. And he shot me in the back of the head, too.
God damn.
Oh, in Seven Courts. You remember Seven Courts right there?
Oh, yeah.
I used to live in Seven Courts when it was really nice back in the day.
Wow.
Yeah, he shot me. I was cheating, and he shot me.
Yeah.
And he said he didn't mean to shoot me, so he hit me with the pistol, and it went off. And then the nigga ran off and left me. It was a .38.
Mm.
It just fucking
had a hair trigger.
Hair trigger.
That's the trigger you ain't even really got to pull much. They don't have
much resistance. Well, it was a .38, so I guess it was an old ass gun, and it went off and it just cracked my skull.
Cracked your skull.
Yeah. And so I ended up taking his ass. I ended up going back to the hospital to pick him up finally.
So the next time he learned from the
first. They put a new cast on his leg, so I beeped him.
Okay.
911 and let him know I'm coming to get his motherfucking ass. So I went back in there and I picked him up and took him home.
How long did that take?
What? The new cast?
Yeah.
A couple of hours. You know how slow Grady Hospital is.
Yeah. Oh, shit, man. I mean, he lived to tell the story.
Oh, he don't tell shit. He work at Jiffy Lube.
Man, so you actually ended up getting married.
Mm-hmm.
At 19.
Yes.
At 19.
I got married. I had two kids. I was sick of the street. You know, I've been in the street ever since I was 14.
You know how fast of a life you must live to be sick of the streets by the time you're 19?
Oh, I was sick. I went to Charles Disco. You remember Charles
Hell
Disco?
Yeah.
And Charles Disco let everybody in for the extra $10.
That's right.
So I was partying. I was fucking in the streets. I had two kids. By the time I was 19, I was like, I'm over this shit. I got kids to raise. Plus, I had went to jail for selling crack.
Okay.
So, by me going to jail for selling crack, I did a year. And I was like, dude. And then
You did a year at 19?
I did a year at 18. You remember when they changed the law in Georgia? You used to go to jail when you were 17. Well, 18.
18, and then it changed it to 17. Yeah.
Well, my birthday was in April. And mm-hmm. Officer Beard, he was on a narcotics squad mm-hmm. with Atlanta Police.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'm going to wait till you turn 18. And I'm going to lock you up. 17, I'm going to lock your motherfucking ass up.
Damn.
He said, because if I lock you up now, you're going to go to juvenile. In April, I turned 17. 5 days later, I was in jail.
God damn.
And I got a trafficking charge.
Uh-huh.
And so I ended up doing a year behind the shit.
That was before the crack law.
I missed that cutoff.
Yeah.
I missed that cutoff.
That was before the crack law.
And when they took your rights to vote.
Right.
Because I didn't lose my rights to vote.
Right. Well, so, you know, in Georgia, if you, even if you have a felony and you've served time, you can still re-register after you've done all your time, got off probation. Not every state is like that, but Georgia is.
Yeah.
And before you actually, plead guilty or been sentenced, if you've been locked up and you got a charge, but you ain't been sentenced yet, or you ain't been found guilty mm-hmm. or innocent yet, you can still vote within that time as well.
Well, I don't think it was like that back when I went to jail, because they was like snatching motherfucker rights. They were just snatching their rights. Oh, you're a convicted felon, you can't vote. So I remember missing it by 1 year cutoff, and I ended up doing that year and then getting out, and I was like, Lord, I need a black man with back teeth.
And so, with back teeth.
Black men with back teeth can read. That's just what I believe.
Okay.
And so I ended up meeting a nice guy, just got out of the military, and he wasn't with that hood shit or street shit. And I was like,
Now, how difficult was it for you to make that adjustment?
Oh, fuck. From selling crack to trying to be a house mom, it was very fucking difficult. Because I got an eighth grade education, so I had to go and get a job. And then all they gave me when I took in my sister kids was Section 8. So I moved out to Riverdale, Georgia, and I can't get a fucking job because I'm a convicted felon. Mm. So it was really rough. Like, I went to school to be a medical assistant after I got my GED, and I still couldn't get no job.
Because of felony.
Yeah. So, and I tell you, Tip, this is the only time in my life that I ever thought about committing suicide.
What?
I never thought about killing myself. Just one time.
Because you couldn't get a bullshit ass job?
Well, no. It was because I did all of this shit to turn my life around.
Right.
You know, get out of the street, try to raise my kids right, and society keep pushing back in my face, you ain't shit.
Yeah.
You know, you go to school. Yeah. I went to school for 9 fucking months to draw a bitch blood. All I was asking for was $10. I drew blood for cheaper. I could have went and shot my baby daddy for the rest of my fucking life. And I'm getting my life together, and then I look up and bam, they say, society say no. Yeah. I don't want to accept you.
Yeah, but they'll accept their own.
They'll accept their own. You can make 100 mistakes when you're not fucking black. And I always taught my kids, I said, look, with the shit I've been through in life, I would never let you become a convicted felon. I said, you can fuck up your credit a million times, but you fuck up your criminal background history, they're going to judge you till you get dirt in your face.
That's right.
So I always stayed on, especially I have two sons, I always stayed on my kids. I said, don't you ever, ever give them that opportunity to put that shit over your fucking head.
Right.
So that's one of the things I really work hard to keep my kids from becoming convicted felons and high school dropouts.
Right. I think all of that shit was... It was instituted so it's meant to demoralize.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's meant to make you give up for whatever reason.
And
stop
that was so,
trying.
There was so many times I wanted to give up. But then, you know, I'm such a hustler from the streets. I mean, this shit started way before I ever was a drug dealer. I grew up in the fucking, on Artright Place over there in Decatur, Georgia. Mm. My granddad was a bootleg man. So all I saw in my whole fucking life was hustling.
That's right.
So that's all I knew.
Yeah.
And I mean, my granddad taught me how to get knocked down and get back up.
Yeah.
When I got married and I wanted this life my husband thought I could have, be a house mama, go out and live the right way. You come from selling dope, forging checks, making a shit ton of money. So a nigga telling you to go work at McDonald's, like, you fucking crazy? I got my check with $200 for the whole week, nigga. I can buy that in tennis shoes. And then I started second guessing, like, I'm married to this lame ass motherfucker who want to do the right thing. I need a nigga who want to go out and gangbang. And then I had to say, calm down.
Doing right
down.
Is so fucking boring, ain't it?
Huh?
Doing right is so boring. That's when motherfuckers start taking naps in the middle of the day when they start doing right.
No, that's called
right.
Getting old, Tip. That's called
it's synonymous
old.
With doing right. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, an old nigga with church shoes you see do drive-bys.
Well, no comment.
No. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, so also at a very young age, you had your own two children, and then your sister left you responsible for her children.
Four kids. My sister was on crack really bad, and I ended up getting custody of her four kids, and I just got married.
So before 21, you had six kids.
With a man who had no kids.
God damn.
And I'll never forget.
What a saint.
I come home. He said, don't go get them fucking kids. I was like, I got to go get my nieces. They're going to split them up. They're going to put them in foster home. And I remember how I came up, how fucked up my life was.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I see a kid in need, I see me. And I was like, look, this is my family. This is an opportunity for me to keep these kids together. So I went and got them. Mm. I came back and shit was packed. And I said, I can't choose between you and my fucking nieces and nephews, my nieces.
Yeah.
And I was like, you got to understand. You know, he come from a Christian family. It was 16 of them. They had a fucking daddy. I didn't come from that lifestyle.
Right.
And I'm like, dude, it's nothing I can do. I got to help these kids.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, all I can tell you, you got a good credit department in your name. I can't pay the rent. And I think that's what made him stay a little bit more. So you gonna fuck up your credit because I can't pay your fucking bills.
Man, that make all the sense in the world, man. Shit. I guess, man, they say a good run beat a bad stay any day. So maybe, you know, the stay wasn't as bad.
No, it's been 20-some years, Tip.
20-some years later. He ain't complained once.
He never fucking complained. And, you know, I got my niece. I have my niece 4 kids now.
Right.
I went and got my niece.
How many damn children? Why you didn't start a daycare?
It would have been cheaper.
You missed your calling.
Nah, I don't fuck. You don't want me keeping your kids. I fuck them up. I have my niece kids now. I went and got her 5 years ago from Atlanta because she was homeless. One of the baby was 2 weeks old. So right. I ended up picking her up, bringing her to my house. And this bitch ran off and left me with these 4 kids.
Four more kids. That's 10.
That's 8.
But wait a minute.
It was 4.
Two
it was
plus 4. Four.
It was 4. I have 2. I had 2 at the time.
You have 2, but
well, I have 4 now. So 4, 8 is 12 in all I've raised.
Good.
You about
goodness.
Right. This is it, but I'm done.
You done.
I gotta be done. I'm in my 40s. I can't do this shit anymore.
But you know, once you become a grandmama,
I'm already a grandma. I don't fuck with it.
Yeah.
I got FaceTime. You can, hey, motherfucker, click, bye, hang up on them. That's the good part about being a grandmama now. Usually the kid will have to come over. You gotta bake them apple pie and shit.
Yeah.
No, you just FaceTime. Oh, fuck you. Hang up.
That's day, man. That's Shakespeare.
Yeah, I don't keep kids. I don't have time. I'm too busy.
You done raised enough. I think you've done you've paid your debt to society.
Twice.
Hey, what's going on, man? Let's take a pause in the discussion to talk about Verishop. Now, Verishop is a new online shopping site with the fashionable brands you need for every moment in your life, from women and men's fashion to home decor, beauty and wellness, and they get your purchase to you fast with free one-day shipping and free returns with no membership fee and no minimum purchases required, which means you can even buy a pair of socks with free one-day shipping just to see how you like it. Now, how you love that? Verishop's expert retail team hand selects and sources every single item from more than 300 brands all over the world, so there's no chance of counterfeits or fake goods. Get fashion brands like Vince, Levi's, and Deadwood. Then you can even get home decor brands like Ball & Branch, Staub & Smeg, and beauty and grooming brands like Blind Barber, all in one place with the premium shopping experience you deserve. Shop Verishop for the fastest free shipping out there. And with my promo code, new Verishop customers could take 15% off the first purchase to try it out. Just go to Verishop.com and use my code TIP. That's Verishop, Verishop.com with the code TIP for 15% off your first purchase. Exclusions apply. Now go on ahead, shop, get your drip together.
I always tell people I can't dwell on shit I didn't have control over.
Okay.
My life was handed to me, and that's what I had. And, you know, and I realized my family was in a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the shit happened to me, happened to my mom, and
that's
probably
right.
Happened to my grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Only thing different than me is I broke the fucking cycle.
Yeah.
So I look at it like this. I don't dwell on shit.
Right.
I keep it moving.
Right. That's exactly how I feel. I mean, I think that coming up, my uncle went to prison. You know, everybody around me was pretty much drug dealers, and you know what I'm saying? It just... in the game. I went to prison, but after me, none of my cousins, nobody in my family after me has made it to prison. So I feel like I've broken the cycle. I think I took their time for them.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what you want to do. Somebody got to step in and say, hey, we can do better.
Sure.
As people, we can do better. You know, and a lot of time, what I've learned from dealing with my family, everybody don't want you to change.
Mm.
My family, some of them get mad. When I wrote that book, they act like we was fucking Beyonce and Jay-Z or some shit. Like I was telling the Jackson story. I'm like, motherfucker, you eat po. I sold a book. You should be happy for a motherfucking nigga. They were ready to sue me. I'm like, for what? Y'all smoke crack. Tell me where I lie. They tell, I'm lying on my mama. Who the fuck want to lie on my poor mama? My mama was poor as a motherfucker. Everything in that book is 110% true.
Well,
yeah,
that's one thing. You can't really argue with the truth.
No, you can't. That's why I never got sued. So I'm like, who am I lying on? Even my kid's father was like, I'm going to sue you. I'm like, for what, bitch? You behind on your child support and she's 33 years old. Go and sue me so I can get my money right back, bitch. Go and sue me, motherfucker. I'm going to call Jiffy Lou, tell him you fucked up my oil change.
Now, see, is this type of true, raw honesty that this shit don't come every day?
No, it doesn't.
You know what I'm saying? A motherfucker who got the nuts to speak the truth, to me, is one of society's jewels.
And that's what I try to do. I mean, I'm a comic now. I take all this shit that used to cause me pain to everything I ever been through.
That caused you pain?
No, that was $100. I got a front row ticket at the wrestling match that day.
11-year-old with $100, that's...
In the 80s?
You know what I'm
saying? And I was living over there by the bluff.
That's
I was rich.
Like $10,000.
Yes. I bought me a front row wrestling ticket. Mm-hmm. I bought popcorns and drinks.
All these people, I wonder how many of these motherfuckers had the jack of chicken leg.
What I'm thinking. How many people had the jack of chicken legs today? But I mean, I take everything I've been through and I try to tell people through my comedy that it's not about how you start, it's about how you finish. And I try to find the funny in everything that used to cause me pain. Because when you can laugh at what caused you pain, I truly believe You got control of it.
Yeah.
I got control of it. I could be somewhere smoking crack, whining about what the situation I was born in.
Mm-hmm.
I make money from it. I sold a book from it. I have a fucking TV show coming out on Hulu from it.
That's dope. That's dope. And this is the silver lining of the crack era.
Yes.
We invested our time, efforts, energy, resources into an industry or a vice that it tore up families, took away freedom, and it kind of destroyed the morale of a community. However, gave us our first little piece of insight on the structure of a real business.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You learn manufacturing, distribution.
Cooking.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's science.
Yes.
But... that is, I think, the silver lining. Like, that was our subsidization. You know what I'm saying? When you get, I guess, I heard Martin Luther King talking about how back in his day, you know, if a farmer, if a white guy wanted to be a farmer, there were all kinds of grants and assistance for him. And if a nigga wanted to be a farmer, he had to get it together the best way he can.
Yeah.
And so I think crack kind of answered that call for, I mean, white folk do it all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, tell you a story. There was a gentleman back in the, I think it was the 20s, and it was during the time of Prohibition. That means that liquor was illegal.
I know what Prohibition means.
I was talking to the dumb motherfuckers with no back teeth.
Oh. You know what I'm saying? I tell you, Tip, I don't know what that word means.
Hey.
I be on your Instagram Googling like a motherfucker sometimes.
So this gentleman decided he'd have a great time selling liquor in the times of Prohibition. Well, he was right. He got so good at it that he made himself a millionaire. Mm-hmm. And he made himself enough money to send his kids to the finest Ivy League schools from elementary up to college. And this gentleman who used illegal means to change the trajectory of his children, his son became the president. That's Robert Kennedy's dad. Oh, no, JFK. Yeah, JFK.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, both of them.
Hey, one was a senator, one was a president.
Yeah. So their dad started out in Prohibition. That's how he built up his bankroll, sent them to the Ivy League schools and stuff, and he became the president. So that means it don't matter how bad you start out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? What matters is the end game, long ball. You know what I mean? So if you're selling crack today and 10, 20 years later, you turn it into a best-selling book and a TV show on Hulu and, you know what I'm saying?
Stand-up.
Hilarious, gut-wrenching stand-up comedy. I think that's, you know, that is a positive, even though it began as a negative.
I truly believe that too, because there was times I wanted to fall down.
Yeah.
And I just kept telling
myself. He just wouldn't let you do it, would he?
No, he wouldn't.
He just wouldn't let you do it.
You know, I never, ever wanted to do comedy.
Right.
I never wanted to do comedy. I was always a shit talker. I considered myself a shit talker.
Right.
I walked into the welfare office and I tried to run a scheme on a caseworker. And she said, you should really look into doing stand-up.
But did the caseworker grant,
She gave me my food stamps.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, but she said, you, it's something about you. You should go try stand-up. I'm like, oh, bitch, I don't want no job. I just fucking want to go watch The Young and the Restless with my free rent and my utility check. And she just kept, I fucked around and voted for Bill Clinton, and he created the Welfare to Work program, and that made me go and fucking get my GED and get a job.
Mm.
And that started it. And I was like, I can't do this job shit after forging checks and selling dope.
Damn.
And I just did an open mic, and it went from there.
What was your strategy at, like, going in to do comedy for the first time? It's an open mic. You ain't never did it before. Did you write jokes down?
I went and watched that Uptown Comedy Corner.
Okay.
And I watched for like 6 months. Every night I would go up there and just sit in the back. And I was like, I can do this shit. My very first story I ever told was my brother. My brother was a fat cat burglar. Like, he used to break in houses.
A fat cat burglar.
He used to break in houses. And one time I was with him. I broke in a house with him. And the lady, an old white lady, was sitting there and looking at the TV, and he was like, freeze, bitch, FBI, and grabbed her fucking VCR and ran out the door.
Hell no.
And that was the very first story I ever told.
God damn.
Yeah.
A fat cat burglar.
Yeah, he was fat, but he could steal your shit. He ended up doing like 15 years one time for stealing.
For stealing a VCR?
Nah, he stole a fucking a very expensive ring out of Buckhead. Mm. And they had been patting him on his hand for years, and finally they just gave that motherfucker 15 years.
Mm.
And he did the 15 years, he got out, and he's back in there today. But that's a whole different fucking story.
You see how bad things are for us in the community.
Oh, yeah.
See the things
we have. It's getting better. I look at you on Instagram. I see how much you care about the West End and all our little area where we grow. And I was like, I love you for that. Thank you. Well, you really push for the community to stay original.
Well, thank you.
And I don't even live there no more, but I be cheering you on all the way from Indiana.
Man, I appreciate that. Indiana you moved to?
Yeah, I moved to Indiana 12 years ago because my husband worked at that General Motors in Doraville.
Right. Okay, now this is just a reminder for everybody to go to expeditiously.com to get all of your Expeditiously merch. And if you don't know how to spell it, look it up, motherfucker. It's the information age. Expeditiously.com. You ain't even got to make the TI capital in the middle, man. But go and get your merch right now, man, because it is available. And I can tell you, you know, with a clear conscience and a pure heart, you buy it, you wear it, you look better. All right, man, you know what I'm saying? That's enough cap for today, and I'll see y'all later. Expeditious.
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey, where you think you going? The show ain't over yet, man. Expeditiously continue. How you like Indiana?
Don't like Indiana.
How's the Midwest, like, compared
white.
To...
I live in this very small town.
Raisins in your potato salad.
Raisins in your potato salad.
Or either not. Maybe they got the carrot salad.
I don't eat their food, but I will tell you this. They some Bible-thumping, Trump-loving gun-toters.
Well, shit. What can you do?
No, but I got good neighbors. Like I tell people all the time, I don't get offended when I see a Confederate flag. Because when I see a Confederate flag, all I see is a Cleveland Brown fan. Somebody who'd like to continue to lose.
Hey, man, that is an interesting point. The Civil War is the only war I've ever seen where we continue to celebrate loser.
Damn.
Well, we as a country. You know what I'm saying?
We ain't got a goddamn thing to do. Hey, listen, that day.
We went to school and they taught us this shit. And these motherfuckers, Robert E. Lee and all the motherfuckers, the tests say they were heroes.
Yeah,
so if you
want
to pass that motherfucking test, you have to put that you're a hero.
Yes, you did.
Well, the motherfucker wasn't no hero for me.
He wasn't.
He was fighting against my freedom.
But they don't tell you. When I first moved to Riverdale, I tell you a story. So, I wanted to be a supportive mom. I didn't want to be a shitty mom like my mama was.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're living in Riverdale, Georgia, in the early 90s. And we go on this field trip. And it literally, Tip, it was to a Confederate cemetery.
What?
And I had no fucking clue what the Confederate, because I'm a hood bitch. I'm from the street. I don't know shit about no school.
Yeah.
And we at this cemetery, and they telling you all about these fucking Confederate soldiers. I don't know what the Confederate soldiers is.
Right.
All I know is I'm ready to fucking eat this sack lunch I brought. So one of the kids was like, is Robert E. Lee buried here? And I'm like, he said, is General Lee buried here?
Yeah.
I'm like, who the fuck is General Lee? And I'm like, this dumbass kid, you can't bury the Dukes of Hazzard. I thought he was talking about the Dukes. That's the only fucking General Lee I knew.
No.
I was like, what the fuck? I told my husband we went to this Confederate cemetery. He's like, what the fuck? Why would they take you to a Confederate cemetery? I'm like, what is that? And I called the school and I was like, oh, you fuckers crazy?
Yeah, see, that's the thing, right? I think us as, you know, as a community of black people, we can't continue to expect to advance while we let our oppressors educate our children.
Oh, the truth.
Yeah, you know I mean, you will never find a Jewish family sending their child to a school that posts Hitler as a hero. It'll never happen. You know what I mean?
Mm-mm.
And I think that, you know, for us to continue to evolve and be as progressive as we need to be to advance ourselves. Yeah, I think, you know, I teach my kid, man, what you learn in school, man, that's mostly bullshit, but it's, you know, it's the bare minimum of bullshit that you have to learn.
Well, I have four kids at the house, and I remember my niece coming home, and she was like, the Pilgrims gave the land, no, the Native America gave the Pilgrim America.
Gay.
So my daughter, who's fucking big in black history, she said, mm-hmm. let me talk to you for a minute. Ain't nobody gave white people motherfucking thing. And then she break out all these black history books, and they was like, they beat us. And I'm like, Garyana, you can't teach these kids all the fucking history when they go to school with all these white kids, because they gonna be looking sideways.
I mean, I think you should, I applaud her.
Oh, and she do. But it's almost like she's turning them racist. And I have to sit up and say, look, Yolanda, it's history, but you cannot judge everybody what happened.
No, you can't.
In the fucking past.
Right.
And if you do that, we ain't going to have no biracial babies. Yeah, that's what's wrong with us. We all need to stop fucking each other so we can get rid of racism.
That's the true strategy.
That's what I believe. That's how you get rid of fucking racism.
Little mixed babies can change the world.
Yeah, because it's going to be hard for that white granddad to say nigga after so long.
Yeah. He's
going to eventually fall in love with the softer hair.
Yeah, you know.
Just kidding, black people. All shit soft, too. Don't be fucking at me in my Instagram talking about our fucking hair. Shut the fuck up.
Man, I think all of these things, man, like, it's a testament to what you stand for.
Thank you.
How you represent strong, independent black women who started, you know, from more humble means and turned that struggle into progress and advancement. I mean, I think that it's a phenomenal story.
Thank you.
Now, you had this TV show on Hulu.
Yes, and I have the writer here with me. He about to fall the fuck asleep.
What the hell? are we not interested?
No, I was listening deeply.
He loved to analyze my fucking interviews. But he's the writer. His name is Jordan Cooper.
Right on.
24 now?
24, yeah.
Project is with Lee Daniel, Ron Howard Company, Imagine.
Dope.
And it's been in progress for 3 years now, and Lee brought him on a year ago, and 20-something year old, I'm like, he never gonna fucking get my voice. And he came in and fucking just slayed.
That's dope.
Yes.
That's dope, man. How's it been to kind of translate her voice into your writing?
It's been amazing. I think we have the same sense of humor, and that's what helps it. I always talk about her, like, whenever she came to see one of my plays in New York, and immediately afterwards, she pulled me aside, and she said, "Nigga, you write like a big black woman."
I told him, I was like, "You've been here before. You came back as a, you was died as an old black woman and came back as a black man. I'm telling you."
Man.
So it's been a journey. Her stories are amazing, as you already know. So, like, turning that into television, but not only television, but trying our best to take that old sitcom feel and bring her newness into it, which is really dope. I say it's like if Archie Bunker was a black woman. That's what the show is. Yeah,
that's dope. Yeah. So tell me, what is the show about?
Yeah, so basically it's about Miss Pat and her family moving to Indianapolis, moving from Atlanta.
Fish
to
out of water.
Neighborhood. Yeah, fish out of water story. Basically just all the shit that they deal with as a family in this all-white neighborhood.
Yeah.
Things that come up that we haven't really seen in other television shows.
Neighbors like calling the police when you go in your house. Black people walking in the house.
Right.
Well, my house.
I don't have that, but they always trying to buy my fucking house, and I had to tell her, like, I was like, "Bitch, you gonna gentrify the white neighborhood? I just got here, ho. God damn, leave me the fuck alone. Buy my neighbor house. They white. Stop asking me to buy my shit. I had to put this house on layaway."
You know what I'm saying?
Well, they don't call the police, but it'd be some interesting shit.
You became friends with the police out there, right? Because I think you were, was it out of you being scared?
No, it wasn't.
And you wanted them to know your family? Look,
I don't see Miss Pat being scared or fearful.
I'm in a very small town, Tip. So, you know, we don't have a black police officer. I mean, you want me to tell everybody where I live at?
Okay, no, don't do that.
Okay, I'm in a very... Your shit gonna be huge. But I'm in a very small town out by the airport. So, there's no black police officer. It's only fucking one Mexican. But everybody know who I am. I mean, the day I got there, I got pulled over all the fucking time. And, you know, they was like... I don't know if they was pulling me over because I was black or because I was new, or they were just fucking curious. But mainly because I was speeding. It was 20 miles an hour on the main street. They was fucking 10 years behind. I'm like, what the fuck are these whites?
20 miles
It was 25 miles or 20 miles. I was just too slow.
Damn.
I kept getting traffic tickets. But, you know, the community to me have wrapped their arms around me. And like I say, they all views are totally different. But I get respect from both. I think we respect each other. My Dennis is a huge-ass Trump supporter.
Yeah. And mine too, by the way.
Yeah, like my Dennis.
Yeah.
I like my Dennis. I mean, it's okay, and I tell him.
I ain't really, you know, you support. I mean, it just kind of speaks to, you know, your standards.
But yeah.
Would you feel worse if they were giving money to the Trump campaign?
I mean, probably do.
About corporations, yeah, but, you know, if you support somebody and they invite you to a fundraiser, I'm sure you'll go and you'll probably write them a check. So,
right.
I mean, I feel more about corporations. Corporations
you.
Yeah. You know, I mean, individuals are individuals. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. However, this corporation right here, I'm actually, like, we're giving you the money that I feel like you taking my money and now handing it over to them, which is, it's unsettling. You know?
Sometimes, I mean, I've left companies for that too.
Yeah.
You know, I tell you,
it's hard not to shop at CVS though. Shit.
Yeah, man. CVS just gave Trump money.
Walgreens is closed.
Yeah,
oh, man.
But also, you know, like, I got on my Falcon shoes today. I was like, I hope Tip don't say shit about my
man,
Falcon
shoes. Man, nah, I ain't really got.
And my Gucci prescription glasses. I had my shit. I was like, look, man, before this shit went down, I put my prescription in these motherfuckers. I'm over 40. I can't see without these motherfuckers. So I went over in my head when you got, because I saw you. Stop a nigga for Gucci. I'm like, I got my fucking line.
What happened was, bruh asked me to take a picture. And I took the picture. And then when I took the picture, I stepped back and I looked at him. I said, man, you got to erase that picture. You got to erase that picture. He said, what do you mean? I said, because you got, like, that's kind of like saying, I'm all right with this.
Right.
Yeah.
And at the time, I wasn't. Now, you niggas wear what the fuck you want to wear, man. You don't have no respect. I mean, for real, bro.
And we only march for we forget shit so fucking quick. I was like, black people, I'm tired of fucking marching.
But
I don't march anyway. I'm tired of thinking about marching.
You know, I mean, it's just like, the thing that I see is, if a nigga walk up to you and put his finger in your face and call you a punk motherfucker, you ready to knock his ass down.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Temporarily or permanently. So why you don't keep that same energy when their corporation done put their finger in your face and called you a coon and, you know what I mean? They pretty much done, like, what? Why now are you so forgiving?
We so easily forget.
Man.
They'll take that same nigga who stuck his hand in his face and kill him.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't do anything to kill the corporation who say, I don't want this.
But a lot of people don't pay attention when these corporations do these things. Because they
haven't bought any more Gucci.
Ignorance is no excuse. What I learned, right? So I asked for a 90-day pause on the brand, just to affect the bottom line, because mm-hmm. I knew when they posted their quarterly earnings, the parent brand, and we succeeded. You know what I'm saying? They took a huge dip, and people stopped fucking with them. Like, I remember right after the after we went online and said, yo, y'all shouldn't fuck with these people. I think there was an award show coming up, but it was like a mostly white award show. I think it may have been the Oscars or the Golden Globes, something like that. Mm-hmm. And white people were saying, no, we're not fucking with Gucci. We're not fucking. I don't want you telling stylists. No, we don't want to wear that. Right? So that's when Gucci started calling. They was in they were shook in their boots. Then the BET Awards came around. Every nigga in all Gucci, everything. You know what I'm saying? So, if I'm Gucci, I'm like, man, these niggas ain't tripping. It's just this one nigga and this is a couple ladies he got riding. Man, this nigga, man, we straight, man. Come on here about your business. We got Dapper Dan and all these NBA players wearing this shit from head to toe.
Well, Dapper Dan spoke on it, too.
Yeah, man, but, like, he worked for them. Like, how can you...
Well, he wanted to get to the bottom of these people.
It was a little bias, man. Mm-hmm. If a motherfucker paying me some money, and I'm like, yeah, these good people. Of course they good people to you. They
paying just you, nigga. You the one getting paid. Right.
Shit. Yeah.
If you collect rent for a slumlord, but your shit is together.
You dig what I'm saying?
Hey, he'll
hard to listen to the complaints of the other people living
exactly.
in the slum.
And I think that's where all people fall short sometimes. We don't stick together.
Yeah.
We do not. We got to do better as a community. I mean, a community of people. I mean, we just got to do better, y'all.
Yeah.
Mm.
Do you think it's because we lost our leaders? Because I felt like we were all together at one point. And then once we lost... Before crack. Like, I feel like... I'm wondering what happened. Because I remember being at a Black Lives Matter protest.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it was like a group of, like, maybe like 400 people. And then... some people in front of singing this song, some people in back singing this song, some people on the side singing this song. I'm like, can we all sing the same motherfucking song? And then we get to a certain part of the street and everybody's like walking and we're talking and we're singing. This is a guy at the front on the bullhorn. This is not a peaceful protest. This is not a peaceful. I said, let me turn my ass around.
What you mean it's not a peaceful protest? Oh, now they won't smoke. Now all of a sudden you got around all these people, you want some smoke.
Exactly. I was like, what the fuck? I turned my ass around, put my church finger up and got on the train.
I really think it has a lot to do with because of how we were brought up and our position in society. Black people ain't never really ran nothing but a corner.
Yep.
You know, so everybody want their idea to be the idea that everyone else follows. So when someone else has a good idea or, you know, a purposeful movement, they're like, oh, who that nigga think he is saying this? No, fuck that. No, I got my own idea. This is what we going to do.
Yep.
And I think that...
too many chefs.
Yeah, man.
And that's what's wrong with us. I mean, it's like back in the day, Martin Luther King could lead you.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't everybody in the way? But don't get me wrong. Now, niggas back in the day didn't like Martin, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
they talked shit about him until he died. Then he was a saint.
The great. And that's what made me mad about the black community. We don't lift them up until they die. What's the dude's name in L.A. who got killed?
Nipsey.
So I had never heard of Nipsey in my life. When actually the day he got killed, I thought they was talking about the old singer Nipsey Hussle.
Russell.
So I said, what's the big deal? This man been dead. So I started to Google. I'm like, who is this dude? Then I read all this great shit he's doing.
Right.
And I'm like, black people, why the fuck we gotta wait till he get killed to put somebody like this dude up on a pedestal? Why the fuck? Right. I didn't know about him. I mean, I live in Indiana.
Right.
I don't listen to rap music. But if you're doing something good in the community, making something positive for black people, why do we have to wait till he's gunned down like a dog to even discuss somebody who was as great as Nipsey? It's a fucking shame.
Yeah.
I had never heard his name before, Till. Never heard his name. Not one single time. I'm not in the hip-hop world. Y'all got to remember, I'm 40-something years old, so right. I don't get out there like that. But if somebody doing something, I know who the fuck Al Sharpton is. I know who the fuck all them attorneys run when them black folks get shot down by the police. I know them. Why the fuck we're not talking about positive black people in our community so we can spread the world? And lift those types of black people up. Right. Those are black people I want to hear about. I don't want to see no bitch on Instagram shaking her motherfucking ass.
Well, that's a little, it's all right. Time and a place for everything. You know what I'm saying? Let's not get rid of all of that completely. You know what I'm saying?
I need to know who the good black leaders are. I want to know who's doing the positive shit.
I think they're out there. They just don't got the spotlight.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is, right? If you're truly passionate and sincere about the work you're doing, you're not standing up on a soapbox telling everybody that you're doing it. You're just kind of leading by example and let the word spread out as it does. I think that's one reason why, you know, Nip wasn't as known as he was after his passing. Because he just wasn't here to broadcast everything he had going on. Although it's just like the shit was phenomenal. You know what I'm saying? Still is phenomenal. But when he passed, It was everywhere. You know what I'm saying? It was everywhere, and that's what made people go research and find that out.
That's how I found out.
Yeah.
I had no clue, and I'm being honest. You can write me and say I'm stupid, I'm dumb. I had never fucking heard of Nipsey before. Right. And when I started getting, I have a daughter that had heard of Nipsey.
Okay.
When I started to do the research, I was like, wow. I mean, it's I want to appreciate people while they're here.
Right.
You know, like, and I tell you something, I grew up in the era when rap first started, fucking, what is it, Kumo D and all of those people.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you another one I didn't appreciate. Till he passed, Tupac.
Whoa.
I never fucking listened to Tupac.
Are you serious?
I'm telling you, Ice Cube, I listened to you, Whitney Houston, I did. But first of all, Tupac wanted to fight all the goddamn time. Every time I told him, oh, nigga, I'm gonna kick your ass at the closet. Won't that little boy sit his ass down somewhere? Then you see him get shot. I was like, I don't got time for this shit. And then I started listening to his music. I was like, this nigga was smart.
Yeah.
Intelligent.
Yeah.
Fucking a genius. This nigga was talking about shit that's still happening today.
Yeah.
It's like he was warning us. Police ain't shit. Da, da, da. He was just telling us all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't nobody really listening. I know I wasn't listening. That's all I bumped as Tupac.
Right.
Like, God damn, Tupac, I should have listened 20 years ago.
I think some people may be too good for the generation that they in. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I think if Tupac came along in the 60s, he would have been right there with Malcolm and Martin and the Black Panthers. And his mom was a Black Panther.
Yes.
He came from a family of Black Panthers. So I think that energy, it just wasn't being received in the 90s. You know what I'm saying? In the 90s, everybody thought they was, yeah, man, ain't no problem, man. Shit,
yeah,
I'm cool.
Yeah, and he was just too smart for
them. Because they had the welfare and the food stamps.
Yep.
Like, man, I'm living free. I'm all right, man. White people are all right. Leave them people alone.
Yep.
Till you find out later on that shit was all a systematic plan.
Yeah, they switching your neighborhoods so they can win and could fucking forever control you. They didn't talk about, they didn't talk about shit like that. How they fucking rearranged the voting and for so they can make sure they forever control your people. But
that's a turkey leg right there.
You get older and then you realize how they just been sneaking in. Look at the West End. To ride and then see motherfucking white people having a latte where you motherfucking shot your baby daddy at. You're like, what the fuck are y'all doing over there? You fucking up my memories. Planting flowers and shit. Get your happy ass out of here.
Hey,
you know what, though? This is the thing. Like, with gentrification, this is the thing that's kind of odd, right? So, when we were living in the hood, first thing we wanted to do, the problem, our way to fix everything in our community has always been make enough money and leave and never look back.
That's right.
And we move into a white neighborhood.
And then they looking at us sideways with shitty cakes at you, though.
But we not afraid when we move into that neighborhood. But when we see them move into our neighborhood,
we afraid.
This shit is like, oh shit. It's like everybody is afraid of the unknown. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like when we are the new people, they're afraid of us. And when they're the new people, we tend to be afraid of them. Like, I don't understand the juxtaposition of that.
I think maybe it's attached to the fact that the neighborhood, like your memories, like you said, your memory, like that latte you shoot your baby daddy, like that's gone. When a white person moves in and Starbucks comes up, that means that's gone. You're losing what you thought you had. So I feel like maybe when white people, when we move into white neighborhoods, they feel like, oh, there goes the neighborhood.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's what you could say for Bankhead and the West Side. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's definitely, I mean, to see a motherfucker walking the little goddamn teacup Yorkie, you know what I'm saying, down the street where the same street my little homie Poncho got killed at, that shit kind of, it's weird. You know
it
what
is
mean?
Weird.
But
why can't we fix up our own shit? Why we need them to come plant flowers? Why we need them to bring that? We don't support each other. So black people think when you support each other, it's free. Well, nigga, it ain't free. And I have my audience is mostly white. And when I tell black people to come see me, I literally told my brother ex-girlfriend to come see me. She Googled ticket, $30. I ain't paying no $30 to see you. I said, well, bitch, you'll pay $30. I see one of them old ass BET comedians. Bitch, I'm funny too, and I got more new shit than you ain't all. Already heard. You've been buying that old shit from the old ass comedian. So I told her, I said, well, don't come, bitch, because guess what? you seeing my jokes free don't help me pay my fucking bills.
That's real.
When my friends got a business, I'd be like, bitch, what can I buy from you? What can I do from you? You know, I didn't realize how bootleg hurt the fucking music industry until I started becoming a comedian. I went about bootlegging my shit. I said, get that bootleg ass movie. Nigga, we going to the motherfucking movie. Now,
that's
what
we
going to do, we going to put some food in our pocketbooks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we going to pay to buy this motherfucking movie ticket. That's what we going to do. And that's how you support each other. But we always complaining. We losing our community. Why can't we plant our own fucking flower? Why can't we make a better school for our own goddamn kids?
We really didn't lose it.
We're losing it.
We gave it away.
Yeah, pretty much we gave it away for pennies.
Yeah, we gave it away. And I think the takeaway is anytime you leave something behind and someone else finds value in it, you can't get mad at someone else seeing potential in something you didn't see.
That's pretty much my marriage.
You know?
You hit the fucking nail on it, whatever the fuck the saying is. That's pretty much my marriage. You took that trash and turned it into treasure.
You dig what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, here, expeditiously, we have a word of the week. And the word of the week usually is fit to suit the discussion.
Okay.
This is the word that you have inspired for the week.
Oh, shit, I hope I know what it means.
Debauchery.
Nigga, no. I ain't never heard no. That's a baby name. That's a black baby name. It was a debauchery.
Okay.
What the fuck? Go and drop the knowledge on the tip.
Okay.
A bitch ain't never heard no goddamn debauchery. That's a black baby name.
Debauchery. Okay, so debauchery's definition is extreme indulgence in bodily pleasures and especially sexual pleasures.
Oh, damn.
I inspire that I'm fat.
I think what you did in that Marriott was a little case of debauchery. You know what I'm saying? Now, especially.
Oh, I debauched that dick too. I debauched that dick.
Hey, look. So debauchery is mainly focusing on behavior involving sex, drugs, alcohol, etc. Things that are often considered immoral. So I'm going to use it in a sentence, just in case you want to go and say the word outside.
I'm going to name my next grandbaby debauchery, but anyway.
Last night I woke up with a terrible hangover after a crazy night of drunken debauchery. Man, well, I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you for having me.
And you have your own podcast as well.
I do. It's called The Pat Down with Miss Pat. And you can find me on social media, Comedian Miss Pat, I-E-N-N-E, the girl way, M-S-P-A-T. I also got a show coming out on Hulu. And my website is MissPatComedy.com.
That's right. And when, so do you have like a tour that you're going on where we can see you live?
Yes, it's on my website. sight.
Well, I'm good. I can't wait to see you in person, man. Just kicking ass on stage. It's gonna be funny to watch white people laugh at these jokes.
Oh, that's all I got is white people. Hey, they buy the ticket.
Yeah, I think that's it. And I buy my ticket.
Oh, you know shit. No, I'm about to ask you for a ticket to your concert for my daughter out here.
Shit. Damn sure. Hey, you can damn sure get one. But see, wait a minute now.
I'm a buy for her. I'm about to tell that bitch she ain't going. I'm about to tell her she ain't going. She's going to tote your luggage or do something or put a little makeup on your forehead before you perform.
Man, I want to thank you guys for joining us here. And thank you, listeners, for listening. And I've been your host, Tip T.I. Harris. This is Miss Pat.
And you've
been listening to Expeditiously.
Thank you so very much.
Now go do something with yourself. Thanks for listening to Expeditiously with me, T.I.P. Don't forget to subscribe at Apple Podcasts and Podcast One and rate and review, please.
Expeditiously is produced, engineered, and edited by KC Morris.
Save big money at Menards. Keep your lawn looking its best with Menards' premium four-part fertilizer program. Each step is tailor-made for the health of your lawn. Get started this spring with a bag of crabgrass preventer with lawn food. Apply just once early in the spring to feed your lawn for over 2 months. Pick it up in our garden center today and check out Menards.com for more hot deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.